I'm Sylvia Burgos Toffness, and this is Deep Roots Radio. Every week, my guests help us connect the dots between what we eat and how it's grown, because every single food dollar we spend either protects or degrades the environment, produces foods with high nutrition or empty calories, and either helps pay a fair wage or keeps farm workers among the working poor. We get to make that choice every time we push a cart through the grocery store, visit the farmer's market, and eat at a restaurant. I hope you enjoy this interview. And fortunately, in the upper Midwest, and in people in Minnesota and Wisconsin have numbers of resources available. One of those that I came across years ago, and I'm so glad that I did, because they just continually provide us with resources, is the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Now, here we are in Wisconsin,
yeah.
But I'm a member of the Minnesota organization because it's so close.
Sure.
You know, we are only about 75 miles from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, and right there on the border with Minnesota. And so we have a lot in common with what's going on there. And we are fortunate this morning to have with us the executive director of the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota, John Mesko. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Sylvia. I'm fine. Thank you.
Oh, so glad that you could be with us this morning. Because certainly, now, the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota has been around for a while, but when I've taken a look at your website recently, I've noticed big changes on it, really interesting things. How long has SFA of Minnesota been around?
We were formed in 1990. Actually, many of your listeners might be familiar with an organization called the Land Stewardship Project. And they got started just a couple of years prior. And the leadership of that organization realized that they needed a network of farmers that could work together to address the problems of sustainable agriculture. Many people are aware that Land Stewardship Project does phenomenal work in the area of public policy, conversation and influence, and so that's their focus. But Sustainable Farming Association is all about a farmer-to-farmer network. Farmers coming together around specific issues, learning from one another, putting forth research on their farm, developing resources to share amongst the whole community.
Now, John, you yourself, just so that people get to know you a little bit better, you yourself are a grass-based farmer, right?
That's right. We raise grass-fed beef and pastured pork. We were raising grass-fed lamb up until last fall, and the cattle squeezed out the sheep, let's put it that way. We just had enough. We didn't have enough room for all the cattle, so something had to change. So we moved on from that. But, yes, beef and pork is what we raise.
Now, where are you, and how big is your farm?
Well, we have 160 acres in Mille Lacs County, Minnesota, which is about 60 miles north of the Twin Cities, maybe 40 miles west of the Wisconsin-Minnesota line.
Ah, okay. So you're speaking from experience, not only on the organizational level, but also in the field. And, you know, and that's one of the things that I find so, I guess, helpful about the Sustainable Farmers Association of Minnesota, in that it's very practically based. You know, you mentioned that whole farmer-to-farmer network. That's really key for your organization, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's really our trademark, quite literally. And it is what we were created to do, and it's the role we're filling in the space of sustainable agriculture, food, and farming. It's what we do. And I think for farmers out there, I think we all recognize that it's a difficult business. It's difficult work physically, but also time and emotion goes into the business of farming. And so when we have experts talking to farmers, it's always it's good information. We want to hear from experts. But when those experts, or when others who are farming are the ones that are doing some of the instruction or teaching or sharing of resources, those have special emphasis in the minds of most farmers. And I think that's played out well for our organization.
You know, as a farmer, you know, there's nothing like actually talking to another farmer and actually going to the farm and actually seeing, you know, how did you do that? I mean, that's always my big question. It's like, what did you do and how did you do it and how big was the equipment and how long did it take? Because, you know, I read and read and read,
But there's nothing like seeing it up close and talking to someone who's actually done it. And your organization really gives lots of opportunities for people to get out into the fields.
Oh, absolutely. There's a number of things that we have. We have field days. We have conferences. We have educational presentations for new and beginning farmers as well as experienced farmers. One of the things that's coming up here shortly in July, the second Saturday in July, is the Festival of Farms. And the information is on our website about various locations where our members are opening their farms up for the public to come and learn, come and see, and interact with folks that are doing sustainable agriculture.
Let me ask you about that event. Now, that's July 12th. Is that something that's open only to farmers, or do you welcome members of the public to that?
Oh, no, it's open to the public. The whole idea behind it is to highlight some of the innovative things that are going on. You know, there's some folks that would say, well, sustainable agriculture, that means, you know, you're kind of going backwards in terms of production methods. Maybe you're not using chemicals or you're not using fertilizers or whatever it might be. And the fact is that, as you know, farming without the use of some of the more elaborate technologies really actually requires innovation, expertise, a knowledge of the intricacies of agroecology that isn't really required with more conventional operations. And so there's a lot of excellent innovation and understanding that can be learned from folks that are doing it this way, and that's what we want to do.
You know, John, it's so true. My husband Dave and I are just in our fifth season as grazing beef farmers, and it is amazing the amount of new thinking, innovation, a combination of science and old knowledge that has to come together. Because what you don't use in chemicals, you have to use in a management technique,
right,
in order to deal with the pest, in order to deal with the weeds, in order to make sure that your cattle remain healthy. In fact, one of the things that we rely on a great deal on my farm is electricity.
Right.
We use electronic fence in order to keep the cattle contained. So the perimeter of the farm is a combination right now of both barbed wire fence and four-strand electric fence. Then inside, when we rotate our cattle, we use what looks like a flexible electronic rope. And we use that rope and we move it around using these fiberglass posts in order to move our cattle from one patch of fresh grass to the next. And so you're using new technologies in order to kind of deal with the management requirements of the farm at the time.
Absolutely.
Now, I understand that SFA also does research. I mean, you seem to have a goal in that. What have you done recently?
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because one of the things we've been working on is one of our goals, obviously, as an organization, is to promote sustainable agriculture and to help sustainable farmers stay in business and grow and maintain their operations successfully. And what we've found over the years is that new farmers, just like any small business, new farmers struggle to stay in business beyond that critical startup period. You know, it's hard for farmers to stay beyond 3 to 5 years. That's when most small businesses really hit the wall, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And so we set about on a project called Adjust 2015. This project is really identifying those key hurdles which cause farms to either fail or go about significant change in order for them to stay in business. So for many farmers, it's we started out raising vegetables and we realized that wasn't going to work, so we changed to beef. Well, that's a question that is of the answers to how that happened and how that change actually came about is very helpful to other farmers. And so in Adjust 2015, we've surveyed over 200 farms in the upper Midwest, around the country, really. And we've also interviewed about 40 of those surveyed farmers to get their stories, to really understand what was going on, both on the farm and in the family and in the interactions that they had with each other to bring about that kind of change. So we are boiling down the results of those surveys and interviews. There is some preliminary information on our website. But this fall, we'll be creating and distributing a curriculum that can be used by other beginning farmer training programs that will help folks to realize what these hurdles are and how they might avoid them.
You know, this is really critical. I was looking at some of your preliminary findings last night and this morning, and these are the preliminary findings of this project called Adjust 2015. And it's kind of interesting. For those who don't farm but who aspire to, there are numbers of courses out there that people can take. One of them, started by the Land Stewardship Project, as you had mentioned earlier, John, is called Farm Beginnings. And that's for people who want to explore going into sustainable farming or who may have been farming but now want to make a substantial shift to sustainable practice. But you're right. It sounds like you're approaching or you're developing a curriculum that is for the next phase. It's for those people who might be already in there 2 to 3 or 4 years and have kind of hit the wall on certain things. Am I correct in that?
Well, obviously we'd want to help whomever we can. The goal of the project is to get the information out to everybody and ideally folks that are just getting started so they can begin their planning process with all the awareness that we have. Our view is that if through this process somebody realizes that farming is not for me, or somebody realizes, oh my goodness, the business plan I've developed really doesn't look like it's going to succeed, I need to change, I need to come up with something else, or given the term of the project, I need to adjust my expectations, I need to adjust my plan, I need to adjust where I'm approaching this, then we would say that's successful. If we can avoid a failure or improve a situation, then we've succeeded. And so you're right. There's a lot of information out there on the website as to what people's expectations were going into farming and what they realized once they got started.
You know, I'm looking at some of those preliminary findings right now. And I think this is a good thing for people to hear, because one of the things you said a few minutes ago that I think is really critical is that in the United States, most startup businesses do not make it past year five.
That's right.
And we're talking about a huge percentage, it's close to 90% or something like
that.
And so it shouldn't be a surprise that there might be that kind of wall hit by those who are beginning farmers too, because farming is a business.
That's right.
It is a small business. So when I take a look at some of the preliminary findings, you know, it looks like about 70% thought, you know, these are the survey respondents that you talk to, 70% of respondents, they had intended that their business be a full-time income.
That's right.
But in the end, about half of the respondents made less than 25% of their income from farming. And 33% made less than 10% from farming, which, you know, talks about the kinds of perhaps investments and expectations that you enter farming with.
Well, you're right. Farming is a business just like any other small business, but for whatever reason, and we could maybe for another radio program, we could talk about why this is, but the reality is that most people, farmers and non-farmers alike, look at farming as in a different category.
Mm-hmm.
There's tremendous quality of life expectations. There's tremendous expectations on the ability to set your own agenda and make your own, be your own boss. So mm-hmm. we hear that often. I just want to be my own boss. I want to be out there with the land and so forth. And sometimes those sentiments overpower reason for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. And
I speak from experience. I know that feeling. I know the what that can do to someone who's getting ready to start farming. It can be very esoteric and very meaningful endeavor to pursue, and yet it is a business. At the end of the day, the bills have to be paid, property taxes have to be paid, insurance, education for the kids, piano lessons, whatever it may be, are all expected from farm families, and we don't tend to think of it in that way. So it's important that we clearly identify up front what the ups and bounds may be coming and for a new farmer.
Yes. In fact, one of those top findings that you enumerate on your website is that 75% of those who answered the survey said that their original business plan did not accurately predict their farming experience.
That's right.
And so, you know, I would suspect that that is also indicative of the fact that there hasn't been a lot of farming curriculum available for sustainable farming, period, up until now.
Well, I think it's important. We want to put as much information in front of people as we can. I think, you know, you mentioned the Farm Beginnings Program. There's many other beginning farmer training programs out there, many different types and approaches. Some are classroom-based, some are based in the field. So there's plenty of opportunities for folks to learn about agriculture. And I think really the core issue is to get at what the personal motivation is. What is the drive that is in that individual to do this? Because there's going to be challenges that we can't even predict. Even the best of programs, it's not going to be able to predict everything that can happen. But you're right. I think we need more farmers, and we need to do more to educate them, not just to get into farming. You know, there's a lot of people who want to say, let's get more farmers on the land. We need more farmers on the land to be successful in this country with sustainable agriculture. And that's true. But if we have more farmers on the land and most of them fail, then we go right back to getting more farmers on the land. So mm-hmm. we need more farmers on the land who can stay in business.
Right.
And that's really the goal of what we're talking about with Adjust 2015.
Wow. Well, this is a very large challenge. Do you see, over the years, John, have you seen more and more people becoming interested in becoming farmers?
Oh, absolutely. There's a tremendous groundswell, and has been for a while now, people who want to get back on the land, so to speak. And I think that's great. I think it's wonderful. But we're talking about a community. We're talking about not just a geographic community, but we're talking about a sustainable agriculture community, which involves producers, it involves consumers, it involves educational entities like universities and community colleges and nonprofits. It involves a support network. It involves a lot of different facets of our community and our culture and our economy. And all of that needs to be developed and grown mm-hmm. so that there's producers, there's a market for the product, there's income for everybody in the chain, so to speak. And so it is a big task. It's even much bigger than just educating potential farmers.
Oh, it sounds like it. You're talking about partnerships, and you're also talking about the end market. So when you think about the market, when you think about the consumers, the people who come to the farmers markets and who patronize the organic and sustainable foods even at a conventional store, what do you think is a challenge there?
Well, for consumers, I think there's probably two or three groups of consumers. I don't mean to be overgeneralizing, but there are folks who are consumers that understand completely the issues of agriculture. They understand pricing. They understand the cost of production. They understand how the way food is produced makes a difference in the quality of the food. And those consumers are obviously the ones that are pushing the envelope. They're the ones asking for certain products at their store. They're the ones who are showing up at farmers market and asking farmers to produce certain things. And these are the leaders among the consumer world. And so the more folks who have that level of understanding and are willing to vote with their dollars, then the more the sustainable ag community is going to be supported. I mean, that's really an important part of the consumer base. And then there's another group on the other end of the spectrum that has heard about organic or has heard about grass-fed or has heard about some of these issues, and they set about with all good intention to engage in that marketplace, but there's a lack of understanding. And unfortunately, because we live in an economy where various entities can take advantage from a marketing perspective of some of these messages around grass-fed and organic, sometimes folks make decisions without all the information. And so we see products that are in the marketplace that don't necessarily reflect the letter, the spirit of the law, so to speak, or the spirit of the intent around organic or grass-fed. And so there may be consumers out there who are pursuing products that aren't really that much different from any other food product out there, or may in the long run be actually detrimental to the food economy based on the additives or preservatives that are put in them. And then there's this huge group in the middle that, you know, isn't really aware or needs to become more aware, wants to become more aware, looking for information. And it's that group that really we want to engage as an organization. Folks that are eager for more information, who want to learn, and who want to invest in sustainable farm businesses and sustainable farming practices with their food dollars.
You know, what you've said kind of brings up two kinds of questions or two issues. One is the cost of food, and the other is the confusion around labeling. Mm-hmm. And just before we get to those kind of looking at those two, I just want to let our listeners know that this morning Deep Roots Radio is chatting with John Mesko, who is the executive director of the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota. And we're taking a look and thinking about what's available out there in the way of food and also the challenges faced by the farming community as they start up and begin to operate new businesses. So, John, we're talking about the notion of how much food costs, because, you know, I'm going to ask you, so is sustainable more expensive? And how confusing is it in the marketplace for people to really identify that great local healthy food?
Mm-hmm. Well, to your first question, is sustainable food more expensive? I think the general answer is yes, and for a variety of reasons, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. I think the point, though, is what kinds of farm businesses do we want to have in our communities? Certainly, the economies of scale in terms of meat production, as you're a beef producer, I'm a beef producer, we can talk a little bit about that. The economies of scale that are present in animal production are huge. So there is a huge financial incentive in industrial agriculture to put lots of animals in a small space and deal with the problems that are created by that with some product, whether it's an antibiotic or some kind of fossil fuel burning tractor that hauls the manure away or whatever it is. It's more profitable for businesses to do it that way. And so that's why it happens. And that food, in my opinion, and I think you and I would agree, is of lower quality and is less expensive. It's very inexpensive. Mm-hmm. And the other component there that most people don't realize is the amount of subsidy that goes into from the U.S. government into those types of operations to subsidize the production of the feed that goes to feed those animals, the corn and the soybeans that feed cows and pigs in confinement situations like that. So it's an artificially low price. The real price of food, if the ground beef in the grocery store or the flank steak at your favorite Applebee's restaurant was truly priced at, included all the costs, the environmental costs, the true cost of the grain that went into the animal, mm-hmm. All of those aspects, I shudder to think what it would be. It would be probably two or three or four times what we actually end up paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that, yes, it's more expensive to buy local necessarily or to buy a sustainable or organic product, but that's because, in large part, because, A, the economies of scale are not there, and, B, the subsidy from the government is not there. It's mm-hmm. the true cost of that food.
Right.
And so then the other question is the quality or the identity of that product. And I think you know as well as I do, the ground beef coming from an individual farmer is ground beef from one animal. So when the consumer buys that ground beef, they're getting a very tightly contained product. It's just all one animal in there. But if you go to the store and you buy ground beef, we're talking hundreds, thousands of animals contributing to that ground beef, and maybe handled by three or four different facilities before it actually makes it. It's a totally different product. It's absolutely and completely not the same product. And I think that's really the very difficult for people to kind of get their heads around, is that the food that shows up in the grocery store, by and large, is the product of an industrial process. And industrial processes focus on the lowest cost. So if today it's cheaper for us to import beef from Australia, we're going to do that because that's what is going to produce the lowest cost. If tomorrow we have to do it from here in the United States, okay, we'll do that tomorrow. But each industrial manufacturer deals with things on a cost basis, and that's what you have with food now.
Right. Yeah, so that's interesting the way you've put it. So on one hand, you've got an industrial process that's driven by profit margin. And on the other side, you've got, yes, you have a farmer that must make a living wage. I mean, you've got to be profitable, but it's driven by the quality of food.
Well, I'd say driven by both. So on the industrial side, you've got a standard of quality that's imposed by the law. So there's a law somewhere that says you have to maintain this level of purity in your food. So for canned vegetables, for example, there is a certain standard by the FDA that says you can have so many insect parts in a can of green beans.
Mm.
So that's the law that sets that standard. And so an industrial process will just do enough to meet the law, because that's the most profitable way to go about it. You don't want to exceed the law. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
There's no requirement for you to do that. So same with meat. There's a law that defines the level of E. coli that's permissible on ground beef. And so that's our standard. That's what we're going to go to. That's how industries work. We see this with General Motors. Now the law is getting interested in General Motors and their ability to produce safe vehicles. So that's just the nature of the game.
Mm.
And so you're right. I think on the sustainable side, we are driven by the quality of food, because most of the smaller producers are consuming that food directly off their farms themselves for their families and their friends, and that's an important component. And then, of course, the profitability aspect is an important thing. And so farmers have to provide everything for their families that folks in town do. And so if a person in town has an income of $60,000, then the farmer needs that as well. Farmer
mm-hmm.
needs the $60,000 in their pocket to provide for the family. Plus, they need to have those resources available for their business. So it's, there's what most farmers end up doing is they take the profit from the business and plow it back into the farm.
Right.
and the families oftentimes are suffering because of lack of resources. And so we need to increase that gross income to farms in general. On the sustainable side.
John, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I mean, we have really, I think, sort of scratched the surface on a couple of really important issues. So I'm hoping that you, John Mesko, who is the executive director of the Sustainable Farming Association of Minnesota, I hope you'll come back.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, let's pick one of these and go in depth.
Great. All right. So, John, if people want to know more, what's the website?
The website is ssa-mn.org, and I know you're in Wisconsin. We're happy to have anybody from Wisconsin be a part of the organization. Just come and learn about what's going on here.
Great. Thank you so much, John. I look forward to our next conversation.
You're welcome. Thank you, Sylvia. Have
okay.
a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Visit my website, bronxtobarn.com, to download this and past interviews, to learn about my farm, and to reserve 100% grass-fed beef. We deliver to Minneapolis and St. Paul, Minnesota. Thanks.